what is this, April the 25th, and if I knew what year it was, I would tell you. But I've been drinking Eagle Rare. This is a show about stuff that interests me. Let's see. I'm Morps. And I completely forgot where I was going with this intro. This is Morps fucking up the intro on Pure Decking with Morps. How many more times can I say my own name? Anyways, tonight we have Big Brother, BSV, Madman, RU486, Sard, and Suave Potato. We're like two fries short of a Happy Meal or the cast of IHN. Take your pick.
Potato!
So, I've already said I'm drinking Eagle Rare. And, what are you guys getting into?
Irradiated water.
Irradiated water.
you got the good stuff.
Got a Knob Creek single barrel, 9 years old.
Very nice. Very nice.
Shock Top.
Of course. Nothing wrong with Shock Top. Let's see. I can tell I'm going to need to do a little bit of re-editing on that decking intro there. There's kind of that uncomfortable pause before it actually hit the... I need to work on that. Anyway, so I don't really have any feedback to get into or a little bit of station news, I guess. We have been working on the box, so we managed to knock all the rotation scripts out again. That's mostly on me. But so you'll notice it's not playing the new shows. It's not playing the stuff like that. It's just kind of grabbing music and playing it right now. But we're working on it. We'll get that straightened out. That's Sarge. You have any station news, Big? Hey, there you guys.
Not right now, actually.
Yeah, me either. Cool. Not until you, like said, give the all clear, and we'll set up the scripts again.
Oh, they are all clear is good to go. I was thinking about screwing around with some of the database backups, but I've decided I'd rather just not risk fucking it up again.
Okay. So,
yeah. No, you've got your all clear. I'm not going to mess with it much more. I now do have an extra mixer on hand, so I may do some interesting stuff with the audio pipeline, but that's going to be down the road. I'm not going to be doing anything anytime soon. Possibly not till after the meetup, if nothing else, just so it's easier to bring the new mixer and the old mixer to the meetup so we can have enough microphones. But I've got some ideas. I might explore that, make it easier to do call-ins and stuff like that. So...
cool.
That said, let's go ahead and move into our discussion here. And RU sent me this story, and a few other people sent me this one. So this particular one's from Ars Technica. But the gist of it is that, I'll just read a bit of it. Stock prices plunged and then quickly recovered after a Twitter account belonging to the AP was hacked and used to send a bogus report falsely claiming that the White House had been bombed and President Obama was injured. It was the @AP Twitter account. And, as soon as that tweet went out, the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 150 points. And other indexes all went down too. Pretty much like an hour later, it was all back. You know, the value was all back. But, you know, of course, hands had changed. So how crazy is it that a hacked Twitter account can dip the stock market that much?
It dipped that's 1%.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, it's not a lot.
No, 1% doesn't sound like a lot. 1%.
The Dow Jones, it's not.
That's a lot of money.
If they knew which specific stocks were more likely to take the bigger hits, they could have made decent cash off of it. But a 1% dip's next to nothing. It doesn't even show up on any charts or reviews for the week.
Yeah, fair but enough. Madman, you're not really looking at it from the broader perspective here. Is that was 2 minutes. 1% in 2 minutes before someone went, hang on a minute, quick, pull the plug.
It got Imagine. All the automated bots.
Sorry?
Exactly. That's exactly what it was. It was all the automated bots trading on, you know, using news articles, and they probably got little preset up scripts if they see this, do that.
Yeah, they do have that. But also, too, you've got to also think there's human element in this. So 2 minutes on stock floor is a millennium for some. you know, in day trading stocks like that. So what if people had started cottoning on to the massive drop and then started selling themselves? You can't turn people off.
Well, you
this
can.
This had gone it's for just, 5 or 10 minutes, man. It could have really torn apart the stock market.
Well, I love this story because the book Demon, that's what the demon does, is it's reading news stories and responding to it by sending out messages and, you know, acting like, you know, it's got an AI in it, but it's really just responding to news articles all over the web. So I'm assuming everybody's read that book at this point now.
I've started. Ruin it for me.
I'm actually reading Electric Church. That's pretty damn good, too.
Ah, okay. But yeah, I mean, that just, you know, this is right up that alley of all these little automated bots that are reading the news, you know, seeing a fake tweet. Now that makes hacking social media accounts pretty scary if you have all this stuff that's going to, you know, respond to a specific Twitter account. So I kind of question if, you know, you should really be tying this kind of shit into, say, you know, Twitter. Just for this reason alone, you can't control what somebody else is going to put in the feed.
How about we recognize that Twitter isn't a reliable source of information? It's not
exactly
fact-checked news. CNN.
What?
Fox.
What? That's, I think, what we should be talking about, is why the hell are people relying on that as a reliable source of information and selling and buying stocks off of what it says? Like, what the fuck?
Why people have automated stuff running the stock market.
Well, I'm not going to fault somebody for that. I've got a whole bunch of automated stuff where I work. It's not stocks, but, you know, I can kind of see these trading bots existing. I mean, hell, people probably put as much effort into the World of Warcraft bots. So, I'm just wondering if you're going to start seeing stuff coming into play. It's like, oh, well, this, you know, we can't let these social media accounts get hacked like this because, you know, the Wall Street trades on it and all the bots are tied into it. So we're going to have to start seeing some licensing and some restrictions on who exactly can set up these social media accounts. It's like, are you a licensed Twitter user? Because otherwise, if you're leaving the stream, you could be, you know, costing people money.
I like that
idea. You would think on a giant Twitter feed like that they would kind of have that set up already. I would hope at least not anyone disassociated with the Associated Press would be able to log into that and post whatever the fuck they want.
Well, apparently the guy who was running it had a couple of other his accounts hacked, apparently via phishing email.
Yeah, I was going to say, so either he had a really easy guessable password or some social engineering came into play or something.
But no, it was admin backwards. Who's going to guess that?
Yeah. Oh, no, it was AP backwards.
Did you try guest?
I'm just really happy that they didn't do an internal security audit of all the AP to check if anyone had false credentials. That's really good. Thanks, AP.
But I don't know.
Turn this into a...
Go ahead, Big.
We tie this into that previous story where, what was it? We're going to start shipping out people and making hacking a war crime, and we'll just start camping people if we catch them doing it. So you hack a Twitter feed, and it disrupts the news like this. Oh man, you are on top wanted list right now.
Yeah, I could see that. Wasn't it a Syrian Liberation Army or something that claimed responsibility for this one? But I mean, it's just... Yeah.
Yeah, I was the one who sent around a video this morning of them loading a mortar in the wrong way around. So I don't think it was the Syrian Liberation Army.
No, no, there's a hacking group calling themselves that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to go with they're just as stupid.
Maybe instead of going after social media accounts, maybe we'll see some kind of restriction on the trading bots come out of this, maybe? Yeah, right. Bullshit.
Yeah. I don't know. Restrictions on Wall Street. You're hilarious.
Yeah, you know, it kind of made sense there for a minute. I don't know what I was thinking.
When you start to make sense, completely throw away the idea, and that's what they're thinking.
Yeah, you're probably right.
There have actually been bills put for the House and the Senate, not because of this, but when I think it was the NASDAQ went down for 45 minutes earlier this year. and everything got shunted to a secondary exchange. Some stocks that were normally $100 were going for 94 cents for about 3 seconds.
Wow, and more than enough time for some of these trading bots, yeah.
Yeah, that brought up the idea of limiting automated day trading. A lot of people were saying it doesn't add any real value to the market. It just allows for some people to possibly make money if they learn a few seconds ahead of everyone else about a trade.
That insider trading?
It can be. There's also some programs we've noticed that certain stocks move in tandem. Like if Coke goes up so many cents, Pepsi's going to follow it within the next few minutes of going up about the same amount. So you have scripts written, if Coke goes up X, buy Pepsi.
Oh, interesting.
There's a few other stocks that have the same relationship. And that's what a lot of automated trading does. It looks for those microtransactions that are going to make like 4 or 5 cents. But if you do a few thousand of those transactions, you're actually getting into actual money.
Yeah, I could see that being possible.
So how long before we start seeing the automated day trading bots adapted for, say, the Bitcoin exchanges?
They already have.
Oh, they're already there. Watching the charts and stuff like that, you can actually see bots coming in, and they'll basically like incrementally raise or lower the price by 0.01 bitcoins per trade, and each trade is for a very small amount. But because like there's such low volume going through, it only takes like maybe 100 bitcoins to really impact the price on the market right now. It can definitely cause some issues.
Yeah.
That's a big reason Bitcoin's not a good actual currency yet, is because it's so easily manipulated by bots and everyone else.
To be fair, it is still the most valuable currency on the planet.
What's Bitcoin up to? I haven't checked the price lately.
It is currently at... Hold on, I've actually got it open right now. Probably about 128. It's
31.
That's a little more sane than the 230 it hit last week.
Only just.
It's still a lot of money for a piece of virtual currency. People think it's still a little bit overvalued just based on the current market saturation, which is virtually nothing. It's still the early adopter stage, and they figure it's probably worth about $50 to $90 dollars per Bitcoin at this point. So all of the rest of the value that you're seeing, and it actually spiked up to like 160 here yesterday or the day before, and all that's just from speculators.
Yeah,
but there's a lot of news coming out, like PayPal is talking about possibly accepting Bitcoin and stuff like that too now. So there's some interesting stuff going on with it, and it's definitely worth keeping your eye on. And because the price is currently on a downward trend, it's definitely worth watching the value right now, because as soon as that bottoms out, that's probably a good time to buy. If it does take off, we're probably not going to be seeing prices this low anytime soon.
That statement was brought to you by Bitcoin.
But don't just look at it like an investment vehicle or anything like that. Just look at it as a currency that you think you would want to use. Don't just buy it to like hold on to it for a decade.
But that's part of the reason why it's so damn, the price is jacked so high up. Everybody's treating it like like gold.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
Well, one problem with using it day by day, it's not stable enough to be used as an actual currency to buy things.
Well,
I buy at 8 o'clock in the morning, at noon could have gone up $30 or gone down $30, the way it's
Most of these online vendors, basically, they convert the Bitcoins directly into their local currency immediately upon the transaction. A number of services out there now where basically you purchase something from them that's valued at the current exchange rate for Bitcoins, and that actually keeps updated like almost on a live basis.
Well, sure, but what Madman's saying is that I might buy a Bitcoin for $130 and then turn around to use it an hour later, it could be $100, which means I've just lost $30. So what benefit am I gaining instead of just converting my dollars to whatever their local currency is? There's not much point in that right now because the currency is not stable enough to make it worth just holding bitcoins unless you're trying to use it as an investment vehicle.
Well, absolutely. You know, like really, if you want to buy and like hold on to bitcoins for any decent amount of time, you really have to like just hope for the long term.
It's not even a decent amount of time. It's day purchases bitcoins aren't good for right now.
I've just realized music's been playing in the background the whole time. We're not redoing it, don't worry. I just realized I pulled that off.
It's still definitely worthwhile, especially, you know, like if you're watching the market, you can generally see if there's an upward trend or a downward trend. Yes, you know, you have these like day multiple spikes during the day, but on the average price, you can actually watch it if you zoom out on some of these graphs. So, you know, if it's on an upward trend, odds are you're probably safe getting bitcoins for the next day or two if you want to make a purchase. But generally at this point in time, you know, there's not a lot of services that warrant going and exchanging, you know, your dollars for bitcoins at this point in time, unless you want to go get like some, you know, a proxy, or you want to go onto the Silk Road or something like that. You know, there's not a lot of reason other than just like the novelty factor and wanting to support the new exchange system, which in and of itself is a really good thing. Like, you know, if you want to support it, you know, go in there, try to buy something with some bitcoins, you know, support a merchant.
I just like how we went off on a 10-minute discussion on an offhand joke I made on an unrelated story.
What was
the original topic?
I'm done.
We were talking about botting, manipulating the stock market, and then Morps asked, can botting be used to manipulate Bitcoin? And everyone's like, yes, it's been happening since Bitcoin became noticeable.
And then our number one spokesman for Bitcoin went on for 20 minutes with a pitch on why you should buy Bitcoin.
No, don't buy Bitcoin. You'll lose all your money.
Wow. Spoken from experience.
Not yet.
Okay. No, but I mean, back to the original thing here. I mean, I just... Yeah, I guess this really brings in a kind of focus. If you've got a high profile social media account, especially something somebody would tie to, say, a financial instrument like, you know, day trading, that, I mean, you've really got to be careful about your passwords. And I mean, they got this guy through social engineering, right? They sent him a good phishing email.
I'm not saying it is that shocking. Because the stock market itself wasn't hurt. It was 1%. Like I said, that's not even going to be noticed at the end of day's trading.
Well, they've got a really good manipulated graph making it look like this huge dip on the actual story.
Yeah.
Well, it all depends on what time frame you're looking at. If you look at really short time frames, yeah, there's always going to be huge dips and spikes.
Oh, yeah. It's a manipulated graph. It's absolutely a manipulated graph when you see the thing saying it was 1%. I just think it's interesting that, you know, a Twitter account had enough influence to knock 1% off of anything.
But yeah, it's a
Twitter account. People talk about taking dumps and what they had for lunch.
Is that the Twitter might not have had anything to do with it if it's just 1%. You can't really link it to anything. They are because they want a news story.
No, that's a fair point.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, let's leave that at that and move on to current events here. Because I pretty much just want to hear people rage at this first story here. it's from The Verge. Internal government documents obtained by the Electronic Privacy Information Center have revealed that the U.S. Department of Justice is secretly helping AT&T and other service providers evade wiretapping laws so that the U.S. government can conduct surveillance on parts of their network. The legal immunity comes from authorizations granted by the Justice Department through special 2511 letters that absolve carriers in the event that the surveillance is found to run afoul of federal law. So, in other words, the Justice Department is giving them a letter saying, we're not going to prosecute you. The authorization began as a narrow cybersecurity effort to monitor government defense contractors. That alone is a funny line. But has been expanded to cover critical infrastructure like energy, finance, healthcare, CNET report, or 4chan, and CNET reports. Normally, the wiretap Act prohibits such eavesdropping unless it's necessary to be to the functioning of the service or unless the user gives his or her consent to be monitored. Well, if you've actually read your end-user license agreement, you probably have. Epic's director Mark Rottenberg said alarm bells should be going off. But rather than changing the law, secret authorization simply allowed the service provider to enter an agreement with the Justice Department ensuring that they won't be prosecuted. Besides AT&T, at least one other company appears to have taken part in the program, CenturyLink. Reach for comment by CNET, a Department of Homeland Security spokesperson said, in part, in order to protect privacy while safeguarding and securing cyberspace, DHS institutes layered privacy responsibilities throughout the department, embeds fair practice principles into cybersecurity programs and privacy compliance efforts, and fosters collaboration with cybersecurity partners. Sure they do. It won't be the first time that AT&T cooperated so directly with law enforcement, blah, 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 blah. Oh, yeah, and if CISPA passes, this is going to be standard operating procedure, because that's essentially what CISPA does, is gives these guys just, you know, flat-out immunity.
Yay.
Wow.
I don't think it will happen, but I believe it would be great if the next administration just went back and prosecuted everyone. Because a letter from the Justice Department isn't immunity from prosecution. It's saying this administration won't prosecute you, but if the next one comes in within the statute of limits of these crimes, and they could argue ongoing, so it's going to be within statute of limits, they could go in and really fuck with some companies, and I would think that would be awesome. Just go in and be like, hi, we're going to get you under not only... breaking wiretap laws, but I'm going to throw in racketeering and criminal facilitation. I'm thinking a minimum of 15 years in prison.
Go on Kim.com on your ass.
Yeah.
Go ahead, BSV.
Well, so pretty much if I get this right, it's the government is having the companies do their job, saying the, telling the companies they won't prosecute, so...
Yeah.
It... How, what part of this is legal?
The part they're deciding
that's why they're giving
him
immunity.
Enforce.
But the government is...
Yeah, they're picking and choosing what laws they're going to enforce.
Yeah.
And what's really funny,
but
the wiretap laws don't prevent me from tapping a lot of stuff. They're designed to prevent the government. But the government saying we're not going to prosecute the government for AT&T helping us.
Yeah,
in addition, we're not going to prosecute AT&T for anything that they might be liable for helping us.
Yeah. The government should not be able to pick and choose which laws that are imposed against it are prosecuted.
It should be able to.
Well,
it's the
government. When you can afford to tell them that.
no one here is surprised, are they?
No.
Nope.
It's still... Still have some hope there's something good in the black hole of government.
Nope.
Government is terrible. That's why it needs to be limited.
Yes.
Well, speaking of limiting government, next story here is actually a fun one. It's from Ars Technica. A federal magistrate judge has denied a request from the FBI to install sophisticated surveillance software to track someone suspected of attempting to conduct a sizable wire transfer from somebody's bank account in Texas to a foreign bank account. Back in March of 2013, the FBI asked the judge to grant a month-long Rule 41 search and seizure warrant of a suspect's computer at premises unknown as a way to find out more about this possible violation of federal bank fraud, identity theft, and computer security laws. In an unusually public order published this week, Judge Stephen Smith slapped down the FBI on the grounds that the warrant requested was overbroad and too invasive. In it, he gives a unique insight as the government capabilities of sophisticated digital surveillance on potential targets. According to the judge's description of the spyware, it sounds very similar to the RAT software that many miscreants use to spy on internet users without their knowledge. According to the 13-page order, the FBI wanted to surreptitiously install data extraction software on the target computer. Once installed, the software has the capability to search the computer's hard drive, RAM, and other storage media, to activate the computer's built-in camera, to generate latitude and longitude coordinates, I'm guessing if they have a GPS, and to transmit extracted data to the FBI agents within the district. Neither an FBI spokesperson nor Craig M. Fiesel, who represents the FBI in the case and is an assistant to U.S. State Attorney, responded to our request for comment. Many civil libertarians have raised serious questions as to what the government is up to. So, essentially, the FBI wanted to figure out who this was, and so they asked for this crazy broad warrant to, you know, we want to hack into this computer, turn on the camera, and start capturing everything we possibly can. And the judge was like, you don't even know who your target is. No.
Is this that they didn't want to release the press, where the computer was, or did they not know which computer they were wanting to bug?
They didn't know. They don't know where it is. The warrant was actually for premises unknown.
Did they have like an IP address? Were they going to be just sending this out as malware to 1,000 computers, or was there a specific computer they could target?
They were targeting a computer involved in this potential wire fraud transaction, but they had no idea what, where, or who it was.
I have a question. Is this the first time we've ever heard of this sort of thing being rejected?
No, but it is the first time they've been so damned candid about it.
How many times do you think they've done this and they weren't rejected?
Lots.
I'm just thinking they would need a MAC address or something to identify the computer. Because if this warrant passed as I'm reading it, it's good on my computer, and I don't do anything with financial services at home.
Well, that's the thing. That's why the judge slapped it down, because if all they really had was an IP address, an IP address is actually a very poor way to identify a computer on the internet. They change a lot. ISPs charge money for IP addresses that don't change. So, yeah.
Once again, the sound of everyone not being shocked.
Yeah. I need a gasp sound on the soundboard. That might be handy.
I was just thinking, for it to work, they would need something to identify that computer and all the other computers in existence.
No, the only identification they had is they suspected it was involved in the wire fraud.
Wow.
They didn't. That's why they wanted to put the malware on. They had no idea what computer it was.
That's like saying, I know somebody murdered someone. I don't have any idea who, but if you write me a search warrant for every house in this city, I think we can find the guy.
That's a pretty much good analogy. So, all right.
I guess they might have narrowed it down to every apartment in an apartment complex.
Anywhere in the world or within their jurisdiction.
Pretty much. So at least they got slapped down on that one. But you know, Swap's got a good point. How often does this, you know, get through?
So, it depends on the district.
When does this horrible dystopian future start?
That would have been about 4 years ago.
I'm always pushing it back. I'm still blaming everything on Hoover.
What an asshole.
Like, Hoover and FDR. Everything traces back to either one of their two fuck-ups. So either Hoover did it or FDR, and it started back then, in like the early to mid-1900s.
I can get on board for that. I like that.
I know it might be a modern computer problem, but it's still tracing back to one of those two people, and they're assholes.
So not just that person, but the specific part of the person, that asshole. Now,
yep, it came spewing out of them in some speech before Congress, and it's their fault.
All right. Next one up is from Wired, and this one is just interesting. Defendant David Norsell was convicted by a San Francisco federal judge or federal jury on all six charges ranging from theft of trade secrets to hacking, despite him never breaking into a computer. Norsell remains free pending sentencing later this year when he faces a potential lengthy prison term. He's apparently some middle-aged dude in a suit. And, they read guilty on all of his charges. After U.S. District Judge Edward Chin dismissed the 12-member jury, Nussel's defense team demanded a hearing to urge the judge to set aside the verdict. A hearing was set for later this year. "We think, legally, these counts can't stand," Stephen Gruhl, Nussel's lawyer, said outside the courtroom. prosecutors declined to comment. Nossel's prosecution was a novel application of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, which is the same law that, you know, they were trying to, you know, that Aaron Swartz killed himself to avoid. Unlike Schwartz, Nossel was never accused of traditional hacking. Among other things, what the jury concluded was that he coaxed, or sometimes through monetary payments, his former colleagues at the LA-based executive search firm Korn Fey International to access the firm's proprietary database and provide him with trade secrets to help him build a competing firm. Those associates cooperated with the government and were not charged. So they're charging him with hacking because he got somebody who had legitimate access to the system to give him access.
That's not hacking. That's industrial espionage. And depending on how it's done, it might be illegal, but it's still not hacking.
Well, what would you call social engineering then?
I wouldn't call it hacking. I call it social engineering.
Yeah, but that's how they, like that AP Twitter account we talked about at the opening of the show, that's how they got it.
On a phishing link?
Oh, they got him to respond to a phishing email. So, were they hacking that Twitter account, or were they just surreptitiously accessing it?
They weren't hacking it.
It's
if you're using a phishing site, I'd consider that hacking to a limited extent.
Very limited, I think.
Yeah, but it that's definitely a little bit more than social engineering, because you actually have to build a web page that looks and everything. Acts like that web page.
Control S.
Well,
done.
Social engineering is pretty much just a grift. It's a Ponzi scheme. It's a lie.
It's a con.
Been happening for 100,000 years. We just gave it a really cool name when it started being applied to computers. So I don't see it as hacking. If you're using Backtracker, install some type of spyware on my computer, that could be hacking. I could see that falling under hacking laws. But just saying, hey, Bill, I know that you're in charge of this account. How are we managing this account? How are we billing this account? And then I go build a company and I undercut my competition because Bill told me how. That's not hacking.
That's
industrial espionage.
I don't disagree at all. This guy shouldn't have been charged with hacking. You know, espionage, fine, whatever. You know, stealing trade secrets, sure. But I just thought it was funny. It's like they're charging this. Yeah, you know, they're so desperate to charge anyway. Actually, that's it's a really good example of how poor that law is written, or how poorly that law is written, that they're able to charge somebody who didn't touch the computer with hacking.
That they were able to get an indictment from the grand jury.
Yeah. So that's the real reason I like that story, is because it just demonstrates how poorly that law is actually written.
I think they're just trying to get around the harder-to-prove financial laws.
Probably.
And I think they're trying to criminalize it, because this might just be a civil matter. A lot of me not being able to tell you trade secrets isn't that there's a law preventing it, it's that I sign a contract with my employer saying I'll keep my mouth shut for so many years.
Huh.
But I don't know why the government would care about criminalizing a private act that doesn't really affect them, unless they're just really wanting to push their power base.
I don't know. I just, like I said. So, let's see. Next one up, this one's from RT, and I'm expecting Big Brother to just, you know, like, lose it. Despite an $84 million lobbying effort, CISPA, the controversial bill aimed at making it easier for corporations to share customers' personal data with the government, faces an uncertain future after approval in the U.S. House of Representatives. The next step for CISPA, after passing by a margin of 288 to 127, is a Senate vote. However, the Senate has yet to debate the bill and has given no indication as to you know, when the proposal is going to get debated. It's not considered a priority. Right now they're working on gun control and immigration. CISPA's co-sponsor, Representative Mike Rogers of the House Intelligence Committee, has maintained that the law would help corporations defend against supposedly inevitable cyber attacks by striking that right balance between our privacy, civil liberties, and stopping bad guys in their tracks from ruining what is one-sixth of the U.S. economy, as quoted by the AP. We're assuming it's the AP and not their hacked Twitter account. If CISPA were to become law, it would grant businesses and government an unprecedented ability to share data without the need to consider antitrust or classification laws. Hacked businesses would be granted legal immunity if they acted in good faith to protect their networks. Good God, that's overly broad. Thanks in part to a bill whose broad language has drawn the ire of consumer and privacy advocates. Yeah, that whole bit right there, that, you know, acting in good faith to protect your network, that pretty much lets a company do anything. I mean, yeah. That's a little overly broad. I could see all kinds of shenanigans coming up from that one.
This is going to reveal a bit of ignorance on my part on the way the legislature works. If the Senate doesn't pass it before they adjourn, doesn't that mean it has to go through the House again?
I don't know. I think it does. I think you're right. I think they have to, you know, it has to be passed within that session.
I think this could be a non-political way of killing it, so that no one has to take a bullet with their constituencies in the Senate.
Well, considering the amount of money that was dumped into it by, say, IBM.
IBM.
There it is.
God damn it. I just got back and all I heard was IBM and I'm pissed.
Oh, you missed the whole story then. Yeah, CISPA's dead in the Senate because they're not going to pull a vote up on it.
I'm kind of happy. You know, I didn't waste my breath talking to that dumb bitch intern. So, my voice got heard. I'm a little bit happy about this, but it doesn't need to just die silently in the Senate. It needs to die violently in the Senate.
Headbutting the microphone won't help, I promise.
No, that was my table.
I would rather it die silently than be brought up for a vote. Because I only know of a couple senators that I'm certain have the balls to say, fuck you, and vote against it. So I would rather let all the cowards take the easy way out rather than it be passed.
Then I'll just come back. It'll come back. And then we'll get a brand new fresh batch of assholes. And they may be like, well, he gave me money, so pass.
Actually, I clipped some of that story. They go into that in the story that it was interesting how many Democrats flipped their vote after that kind of cash injection was put into that bill.
Gee.
So it was a lot.
Fuck, I used to actually respect IBM. I don't know, dumb, isn't it?
Well, IBM used to actually make something. Now they sell management make services. No, they don't.
They don't? Oh, okay.
Lenovo makes those. Then. They sold that a long time ago. I think IBM still actually makes servers, but their primary business is selling management systems. They you know, it's not so much that you buy a server from them, it's that they run the server for you.
I just heard the other day that they're actually selling off all their x86 server platforms, so they're only going to be doing AAX and AS400, isn't it?
Yeah. Sarge, you're breaking up really bad, man.
Yeah, my freaking internet keeps going in and out.
It
well,
shows.
Yeah, you sound like the creature from the Black Lagoon there, so I think
before
I know
before he
what
was gelded.
So, yeah. Let's see. Next one up. This one's from Wired. There's many reasons to password and protect or encrypt one's digital data. Foremost amongst them is to protect them during a security breach. Another top reason is to keep the government out of your hard drive. The issue is front and center as a federal magistrate is refusing to order a Wisconsin computer scientist to decrypt his data that the authority seized from kiddie porn suspect Jerry Friedman. The reason is simple. The Fifth Amendment. The Fifth Amendment right against compelled self-incrimination protects those suspected of unsavory crimes, according to U.S. Magistrate William Callahan Jr. of Wisconsin, who wrote, "This is a close call, but I conclude that Feldman's act of production, which would necessarily require his using a password of some sort to decrypt the storage device, would be tantamount to telling the government something it does not already know with reasonable particularity. That's a weird word. Namely, that Feldman has personal access to and control over the encrypted storage device. Accordingly, in my opinion, Fifth Amendment protection is available to Feldman. Stated another way, ordering Feldman to decrypt a storage device would be in violation of his Fifth Amendment rights against compelled self-incrimination. Henny Fakoy, a staff attorney with the Electronic Frontier Foundation, stressed that the decision is important and not because it might hinder a kiddie porn prosecution. This isn't just about child porn. It's about anything on your computer that prosecutors or government officials may want, he said in a telephone interview. Federal prosecutors did not immediately respond for comment, but said in court papers they have spent months trying to decrypt the data. The FBI is performing admirably in the digital arms race between those seeking to hide evidence of their wrongdoing through encryption and law enforcement officers seeking to uncover that evidence. But the expense in time and resources investigating cases like this one is beginning to inhibit the provision of justice, the government said, in seeking the magistrate to compel the suspect to unlock the data. The suspect was not immediately reachable. To be sure, description orders are rare, but they have never been squarely addressed by the Supreme Court, despite varying opinions in the lower courts. Just last year, for example, Federal Appeals Court rejected an appeal from a bank fraud defendant who had been ordered to decrypt her laptop so its contents could be used in her criminal case. The issue was later mooted for the defendant. Romano Frisco, as a co-defendant, eventually supplied the password. Contrary to Wisconsin child pornography case, however, the Frisco matter was distinguishable because the authorities had evidence that her hard drive might contain evidence against her, meaning the court felt the Fifth Amendment rights were not an issue. That's because the authorities had recorded a jailhouse conversation between her and a co-defendant in which the laptop contents were discussed. It's worth noting that encryption is not 100% effective, and failing to comply with a judge's order, or any order for that matter, might result in a contempt charge and land you in jail pending compliance. Alleging you forgot the password is another story. So, pretty much what they're saying here is this judge has said that compelling somebody to decrypt a hard drive on a laptop if they're not already certain of what's on it, is a violation of their Fifth Amendment rights.
That's fair.
Good.
That word, no, I think, is particularity.
Ah, thank you.
I'd say it's no different than being forced to tell somebody where you've buried treasure. And, you know, everybody knows you can't do that.
It just takes a ball peen hammer and four or five of your toes, my friend, and you will tell me exactly where that's buried.
Probably.
One thing that kind of bothered me about the wording, they would compel the person to tell them their password. How would they compel the suspect to do that?
Yeah, that's
the ball peen
hammer.
Put you in prison for life? Contempt is stupid in this country. There's a limit to what I can do to a murderer. Being held in contempt can be forever, until the judge that has put you in contempt dies.
Yeah,
well, so you can spend longer in contempt than you would get for the kiddie porn.
Yeah, what the contempt of court is, basically they just put you in jail till you do what they want.
Bad, so. You're stubborn.
And that doesn't necessarily count as time served. So if they hold you in contempt for 30 years, and then you decide to tell them what was on your laptop, they can pop you for however long the max is for whatever they're prosecuting you for, and you stay in there for that amount of time, too.
Could they really, though? What about statute of limitations?
Statutes of limitations only work up until the indictment. You've been indicted. And the reason you're not getting a fair, quick and speedy trial isn't the system. It is you refusing to cooperate. So you don't even have the my right to a speedy trial. So yeah,
lovely.
Contempt is scary in this country. Judges have way too much power when it comes to that. It's never been limited.
I did not know that.
So yeah, you can be, if you refuse to take off a hat in court, when the judge says no hats, you can be thrown in jail for the rest of your life.
So you should be. For being a dick, you should be.
My favorite contempt that I've heard recently was from the Sovereign Citizens Brigade in Wisconsin. They refused to rise for a judge, saying that he was no better than them and they shouldn't need to rise for him. They could still respect him, but they weren't going to defer to him, as it was. So they were held in contempt for, I think, 3 months.
Damn.
Because they didn't stand up. They still pled guilty to whatever it was they were being charged with, because they were. They didn't hinder prosecution or hold up proceedings in any way. They just didn't rise when the bailiff said, "I'll rise."
Yeah, that's a bit far-reaching. At that point,
I guess there's no oversight, huh?
No, you can't really appeal it to anyone.
But at that point, shouldn't someone in the court circuit at the time say, look, Judge, I think you're being a bit of a dick here?
They might. And it might not have been that long. I'd have to look it up again. But they were held for weeks in contempt.
See, judges should be held on the don't be a dick law. Yeah, when it comes to contempt. You're being a dick.
You know, if
two out of three clocks say you're being a dick, yeah, you're being a dick. Let the guy
Here's
out.
Here's an idea. If a judge gets called out on the being a dick law, we get to throw them in contempt for however long we want.
I'm just thinking contempt should be limited to you're preventing the proceeding from going forward.
Yeah.
No, that's what contempt was originally meant for. And the reason it's never been limited is most judges don't abuse it.
But I still think that you can't give the common courtesy to rise for the judge, for we have given them the power to pass sentence over us.
The view of the Sovereign Citizens Brigade is we're all sovereign entities and no one is superior to the individual.
Well, they need to pull their heads out of their ass because they're not living in the real world.
It's an ideology. It's not the real world.
And good luck sitting rot in jail for 3 months for all I care.
All right, let's go on to the next one here. This is from the LA Times and is a little bit less disheartening than, well, I don't know. The last one wasn't bad. I mean, the whole you can't be ordered if they don't already know what's on the hard drive.
My question is, that's
interesting that they've got that kind of, you know, that they get to that specific. It's like, well, no, we're pretty sure we know what's on the hard drive and we know it's yours, so we can force you to decrypt it versus the, they're guessing what's on it.
If they're wrong and there's evidence of a different crime, do you get prosecuted or do you get immunity for the crime that they find out through wrongful means?
I would assume it would get thrown out, wouldn't it?
I know a lot of times it does with search warrants.
I don't know. It's what that's the real reason encryption is so interesting, is it's a largely untested area. And pretty much that the fact that we have to keep arguing about, well, you know, can they order you to give up your password or not, is proof that the technology is actually pretty good. You know, if they really had all these back doors and could just crack it, I mean, this wouldn't even be an issue. You know? But
I'm starting to think I need a lawyer to listen to this show.
You need a lawyer for everything. The reason you don't cooperate with the police isn't because you don't want to help them. It's because you are guilty of something. Just need a lawyer to tell you when to shut up.
All right, Madman, you're going to be my spokesman for when I'm in the trip.
There we go.
Find up in court.
They'll hold him in contempt of court just for, you know, would you quit pointing shit out? We're trying to throw a man in jail here. Come on. Okay.
Like it.
Next story up. This one's from LA Times, and it's just fun. NASA has launched 3 smartphones into orbit as part of a low-budget experimental satellite program that uses off-the-shelf components. 3 Google HTC Nexus One smartphones are circling Earth at an altitude of about 150 miles and will burn up on re-entry in the next 2 weeks, NASA said. The smartphones, which are encased in 4-inch metal cubes, are running the Android operating system. I don't know of any satellites running iOS. I just want to point that out. The mission of each phone set is simple. Snap photos of the Earth and send back the periodic radio messages. The goal is to see just what the smartphones are capable of and whether they can act like the brains of future satellites, according to NASA officials. The launch occurred Sunday when Orbital Science Corp's Antares rocket lifted off from the Wallops Island Flight Facility in Virginia. By Sunday, amateur or ham radio operators had already begun notifying NASA that they had picked up radio signals from the satellites, according to Ruth Marler, a NASA spokeswoman. One of the goals of the program is to build a satellite that costs less than $10,000 using off-the-shelf equipment. The PhoneSat's UHF antenna is actually just a piece of a carpenter's tape measure. That's cool. The smartphones aren't entirely stock, however. There are 2 PhoneSat 1.0 craft that have larger external lithium-ion batteries, as well as 1 PhoneSat 2.0 that has a solar cell. Ironically, when engineers began planning the device, the Nexus One smartphone was perhaps the best on the market. Now it's considered out of date and is no longer sold.
Typical.
But yeah, they made satellites out of cell phones.
Well, you know, I think that's a great idea. You know, I'd say cell phones are probably on the bleeding edge of lightweight, compact computing. So, you know, like, why not?
Battery.
Well, you can always put in your own custom battery, especially if you got it being charged on solar cells and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
When I first heard this story, I couldn't help but feel a little bit angry, because I just imagined the kind of person that brought this up in NASA. Yo, bro, you got that dick bag that you went to with in high school, and he followed you to college. He's got the bleach blonde hair. He's like the cool kid, you know, the just general dick bag. He says bro a lot. He plays NES games because bro, they're badass and they're ironic. And he wears
he's all about ultimate backwards. Frisbee.
Yeah, he knows about Frisbee. He's like, let's play hacky sack, bro. It's just, that's the kind of dickbag that would request this.
No, no, it wasn't that guy, man, because they would have been Apple phones, dude.
That's true. Personally, I bet you anything. What were these, HTC ones, you're saying? Yeah. I bet you HTC gave NASA a hefty chunk of change to use those phones. Anything that results in additional funding for NASA is good. I think NASA should go fucking NASCAR style. Get these guys more money.
I think we should give them more money if we change their focus from Muslim outreach back to exploring the solar system.
Agreed.
I mean, so long as their primary focus is Muslim outreach, I think we should can NASA completely. Just
I missed something. I must have missed something. Tell me about it after the show.
Yeah, I'm a bit lost
early
too.
On in Obama's administration, he added a Muslim outreach as one of NASA's goals. I don't particularly remember why.
He then canned the manned space flight. The funding for manned space flight is going to Muslim outreach right now. We were on target and under budget for a trip to Mars. The Ares project was canned, and then manned spaceflight was changed to Muslim outreach.
I don't Obama. Think he changed NASA. I think what he actually did was reallocated the budget.
Yeah, he changed some of the funding, so it's not all of NASA's funding isn't Muslim outreach. But the manned spaceflight portion was moved to Muslim outreach, and then I think slightly cut.
Yeah, just to clarify, it's not NASA doing Muslim outreach. It's their money.
No, it's actually part of NASA. It's still, as a line item budget, it falls under NASA.
Cue
so
the conspiracy
they might call
theorists.
It something else, but...
I blame the lizard people.
It's NASA. It falls under their administration, and it also falls under their funding.
I don't care about Muslim outreach. I want motion outreach.
I want to trip to Mars. I want to play Sammy Hagar's Marching to Mars on a fucking rocket ship drinking tequila on my way to the Red Planet.
But if you're drinking on the Red Planet, what'll prevent Earth from falling into this? Anyways.
I'm hoping the gravitational pull from Mars will at least slow it, because it should increase if I'm drinking there.
You know, all I gotta say is, you know, let's completely defund NASA and just restart the Orion project. Screw all this fiddling around with getting little bits of stuff into orbit. And screw all these, you know, international atmospheric nuclear weapon treaties. We need Project Orion. We need to get into space with nuclear bombs. Only option.
I'm all for space marines.
That's a good way to dispose of all of our nuclear arsenal, too.
Exactly. It's win-win. Nothing could possibly go wrong.
I would like a nuclear-powered spaceship.
I'd like to see Korea try to do Orion, actually. That would solve a lot of problems.
Oh, God. All right, let's go on to the next story here, because it's even more fun. It's from CTV News. Visions of a sci-fi future where armed robots patrol the Earth and humans live in fear for their lives are realistic enough that Human Rights Watch is calling for a ban on the development of autonomous weapons while humans still have the upper hand. The group joined an international coalition of non-government organizations this week to launch the ominously named Campaign to Stop Killer Robots. These are armed robots that could target and kill without any human intervention should never be built, said Steve Goose, Arms Division Director at Human Rights Watch, in a statement. A human should always be in the loop when decisions are made on the battlefield. Killer robots would cross moral and legal boundaries and should be rejected as repugnant to the public conscience. I don't know. I think Terminators are pretty cool looking, actually. The group launched...
Especially one from the television series. That's dual purpose. That's a sex bot that can kill people.
There you go.
And who doesn't want that?
Well, probably it's John using the sex bot at the moment, but, you know. The group launched a campaign at the UK's House of Parliament Tuesday in an announcement that included an adorable 1960s-style robot. Also in attendance were Jody Williams, a Nobel Peace Prize laureate for her work to ban anti-personnel landmines, and Dr. Noel Sharley, an artificial intelligence expert from Sheffield University. The group is hoping the campaign will lead to an international treaty as well as the domestic laws in individual countries that would ban the production of such weapons, similar to the international campaign to ban landmines, because that worked so well, launched in 1992 when Human Rights Watch was a founding member. While the term killer robots okay, I'm going to stop the story right there. These people are deadly serious.
Sounds like a bad Leslie Nielsen film, man.
No, these people are serious. They want autonomous killing robots banned right there next to landmines. Because, you know, there's not thousands of those things just laying around.
Oh, there's not thousands more being left out in Syria right now.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
So just like everything else, we'll just relabel our autonomous killer robots to something better.
They'll just friendly autonomous robots. They'll just comment that line of code out and call it the self-driving car. I think Google's working on it. So.
But one almost had a kill earlier.
It did. That was awesome.
It was only the handbrake, though.
Yeah. Yeah, one started going in reverse, almost took a couple of people out. That was funny.
The first autonomous killer robot has been born. Well, attempting to maim robot at the very least.
It's one step closer.
I couldn't find any good reality-bending stories like I had last week with the world running on VMware. But, oh God. You know, stopping good. The killer robots, I thought that was pretty good.
I don't know. I think the Cylons should be allowed to exist, right? Everyone likes Terminators.
Well, these are the same people who are normally campaigning for the rights of, you know, the minority. I would think, you know, robots would just fall right in line with them. I mean, of course, Galaxy 15, we support the robot uprising, so, I mean, you know.
If the car successfully killed somebody, I think it could be a minority. But right now, it just falls under normal robots, and there are dozens of those in any Toyota plant. So... if he successfully ran over somebody, then it would be at least one killer robot, and it would fall as a minority. We could possibly even get civil protections.
Wow. All right, let's go ahead and move on to this. Yo! Hadouken! Y'all like the new Digital Dojo intro there?
Yeah,
very
that's
nice.
Awesome.
Yes. Yeah, are you? Fantastic suggestion on the Hadouken in there.
I told you, I'm not just around for my good looks.
Well, thank God for that then, right? So, let's see. I got a couple of things in Digital Dojo. First one up, the stories from Bache Online, but the service is VirusTotal. The popular VirusTotal service, which can run more than 20 antivirus scanners over a sample in one pass, can now also look for signs of malware infection and captured network traffic. To perform a check, users upload network packets that are captured in the common PCAP format instead of sending VirusTotal the more traditional things like an EXE or PDF file. Don't mind me, I'm just playing a little Mario here. And so pretty much what they're doing with it is they're running Snort and Securitata against it and then sending back anything that, you know, comes out with, you know, an alert.
Pretty cool, but probably have to be kind of careful what...
You know, yeah, you don't want to send a PCAP of, like, you know... your passwords being transmitted or anything. The other thing is
exactly.
you already have to know how to read IDS alerts to make use of this thing. So I'm kind of thinking maybe if you're doing a one-off or like you're, you know, you're doing an investigation maybe for a client, but it's not like your regular job, you know, it could be useful. But I mean, it's kind of interesting, but really to do IDS right, you have to do long-term monitoring and you really should be setting up your own gear. Like I didn't see anything for like sending them PCAPs on a regular basis. I guess if you've got a machine you suspect, you might, you know, do a capture of its traffic and then send it off to see what comes up if you don't have the resources to run a full IDS. But Norton Securitate are free. You just need the extra box to run them on. But anyways, I thought it was interesting. You know, you could send them a PCAP and they'll run it and give you a report back. So could be useful. I mean, you never know what's going to be useful when it comes down to doing a job. So it's just another tool in the arsenal VirusTotal hands you. And I like VirusTotal. You just want to be careful on what you send them, because if you're, say, sending crap to VirusTotal to see if your malware is going to make it past all the AVs, they take pretty good looks at everything that's sent up. So, you know, your malware won't be picked up today, but it probably will be tomorrow if you're sending stuff up to VirusTotal. So, because they do share their results with, like, everybody. But, you know, if you got a file and you're not sure, I send files up to VirusTotal all the time, just not my own tools. I, like, if I've generated a meterpreter payload or something, I'd try not to send that to VirusTotal. But, you know, if I get a file I'm not sure of, yeah, I'll send it up there. So.
Yeah, it's a good tool to use.
Yeah, it's just handy to know about, and I guess now you can send them a PCAP, so if you know you got something you're not sure on, you can send it all on up. Although, as somebody who's done a lot of IDS work, I can tell you almost any PCAP you send them with a significant amount of traffic in it, you're going to get something back, and then you're going to have to sit there and sort through what's real and what's not. I'm willing to bet they have like no tuning at all on these alerts. They're just taking the raw rule sets. So, I mean, because how can you tune? I mean, you don't know what's what. You don't have a reference. So I question its utility, but I point out its existence. Fair enough? And
sounds good.
The next thing I have for Digital Dojo, now this is cool. It's called chocolatey.org. It's spelled a little funny. Chocolatey.org. Chocolatey is a global PowerShell execution engine using the Nougat packaging infrastructure. Think of it as the ultimate Windows automation or the ultimate automation tool for Windows. Chocolatey is like apt-get, but built for with Windows in mind. For those unfamiliar with apt-get or Debian, think about Chocolatey as a global silent installer for applications and tools, which can also do configuration tasks and pretty much any other script you can throw at PowerShell. So the short version is this thing is apt-get for Windows using .NET and PowerShell. And they have a really nice set of packages in their repository already. If you think of Inite, this thing's similar, except this thing's scriptable, can do all the configuration tasks, and you could push it out via AD since it is just a PowerShell script. And when I was browsing through the repo, they had Notepad++, all the browsers, all kinds of programming tools, VirtualBox, and pretty much all your big open source projects, Inkscape, LibreOffice, GIMP. So, you know, if you had a common setup for Windows, you could, you know, put yourself together a PowerShell script that just drops in place all your configuration, all your programs, all the stuff you want to use using this Chocolatey extension, and either A, push it out via AD. So, like, you know, you want everyone on Firefox and you want to set up this particular way, you could write the scripts using this tool and do it and shove it out. Or B, you could just, you know, keep it on a flash drive so whenever you install a new Windows system, you just run the script and boom, you're off and ready to go. So, and the other thing you could easily do with this is you could set up a little quick script with it and run it as an automated task or whatever Windows calls its cron jobs these days. Automatic task. I think they've changed the name once or twice on it, but usually I think they call it a task. But you can just have it run the thing every once in a while, keep your software up to date.
That's a cool idea.
So, I don't know, everybody. I think we put everybody else to sleep with my dojo here, so.
I like it. I'm looking at the repos right now.
Yeah.
They have all sorts of stuff on here.
Oh, yeah.
And it doesn't written... look to be all open source stuff either. They have a lot of closed source.
Oh, did they?
Like, yeah, a lot of... I mean, it's freely available stuff.
Yeah.
I think Java's I saw on there, in WinRAR there, right? is on there.
Yeah.
There's some other commercial apps I've kind of seen, too. PDF Creator. Interesting.
But, yeah, there's all kinds of stuff in there. So you could pretty much... And, you know, if you are doing some kind of a large deployment with this kind of stuff, you could probably put your own repo somewhere and put... Like, if you had a commercial app that you wanted to distribute to a, you know, a set of machines, assuming you have a proper license for it, of course. You know, you just write up your own repo for this thing and, you know, host it locally on your own network. But, I mean, I guess, you know, if nobody else has really gotten really crazy excited about writing scripts to keep their Linux systems up to date because it makes them really easy to manage when you do that, this lets you do the same thing with PowerShell and Windows.
The only thing that I don't like about it is it's PowerShell.
It is PowerShell.
You tried to do anything in PowerShell, dear God.
My only real complaint with PowerShell is it takes forever and 3 weeks to start.
Oh, no. My biggest complaint, dude, is the syntax for it is freaking ridiculous. You want to check, essentially, in the GUI where you check one box, it's like dash and then 30 characters after it to say, okay, check that box. The syntax is ridiculous. That's why I don't like it.
Well, that's because they've got the, you know, it's like the sick love child of bash and batch scripting.
Well, yeah, and that's, they're trying to make Windows into a CLI OS, and it's not. I mean,
well, they tried.
I mean, they tried, and yes, it is. There's always been DOS, but I don't know. In my opinion, they didn't do it well. Just like
that's better than nothing.
Many other things.
But anyways, so of course, that's really all I've got tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're constantly working on it. We're always looking for new music to add. Of course, Pure Decking every Thursday. Shoot the Noise on Wednesdays. NR7. What's your schedule on NR7 there, BSV? I know it's on Mondays, but...
I don't know when I'll be doing another show.
Fair enough.
Too busy playing games.
Yes. I'm doing research. Research,
there you
yes.
go. There you go. What's I know you're working on the format for Shoot the Noise there, Big. You going to try to keep that thing weekly, or are you going to go every other week? What's the story there?
It really depends. To try to increase quality content, if there's something interesting going on that's not being recorded, I'll start recording it. And then we'll have a weekly discussion topic Wednesday nights or biweekly. It really just depends on you guys if you suck or not, you know.
Wow. My show sucking's not my fault, it's your fault.
Yeah, exactly.
It's time restraints. At the moment everyone's got some time restraints on the Wednesday, so it'll come back. When it does come back, it'll be a lot better than the last couple of shows it's had.
I really hope so.
So, of course, hit up the Galaxy 15 radio site, the Twitter handle, the feedback forum, the subreddit, the IRC, the mental, you know, use your telepathy and send obscenities to Big. I don't know. However, I've lost track of the number of ways there are to get a hold of us. Just yell at the website really loud. I'm sure we'll hear it. So that's really all I've got for today.
Whoever keeps sending me that telepathic image of the goat, thank you. It's what keeps me sane at night sometimes. It's nice.
It's the cliff, man. You get the pushback.
Oh, yeah.